Thank you for your patience. So I don't think this is going to be anywhere near as good as the drama, but... Is everybody ready for the story of Lord Ram?
Yes!
All right. So first we're going to sing the sloka from the Das Avatar about Ramachandra. Okay. Can we sing together? Vitarasi dikshu rane dikpati kamaniya dasam kamolim balim ramaniya keshava dvita rama sharira jai jagadisha jai jagadisha
Vitarasi dikshurane dikpati kamaniyam dasamukha mauli balin ramaniyam. The next avatar is Ramchandra. So the Ravan, who had 10 heads, he challenged the Lord. And Lord Ramchandra took up the challenge and killed him.
So our story starts with Valmiki. So Valmiki had been a criminal. And when he was convinced that he should become a saintly person, he was instructed to chant the name of Ram. And he said, I can't chant God's name. And he said, all right, chant Mara, which means death. He said, okay, I can do that. So of course, Mara, Mara, Mara becomes again Rama, Rama, Rama. And Valmiki saw the whole Ramayana, all the pastimes of Lord Rama, before they appeared on the earth. And he wrote them in beautiful poetry. Of course, Valmiki also got to participate in the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. And by studying his Ramayana, one will also immerse one's mind in these pastimes. And if one likes, one will be able to see the pastimes within one's heart and also to participate in them. Now, these pastimes of the Lord, they are all transcendental. Generally, we want to hear the activities of somebody within this world, what some great person has done, a politician or a sports hero or an entertainer or a scientist. But all the activities within this world are in the platform of illusion, whereas the activities of the Lord are all eternal and transcendental. And just by hearing these stories, just by hearing these activities of the Lord, one also becomes cleansed of illusion and sees the truth as it is. One becomes enlightened in the absolute truth, param sattvam dhimahi, as it says in the Bhagavatam. One enters into meditation on the absolute truth and becomes a servant of the Lord, which is the goal of life. Oops, how do we go backwards? We should go forwards. Okay. So the story starts with King Dasarath. And King Dasarath, a part of his responsibility as a king is to make sure there's an heir. Whenever you're in charge of something, you want to make sure that there's succession, that someone's going to take over after you, not just that you leave without training anyone. So generally, the royalty, before the modern time of voting in a head of state, they would train their children. And they also knew a scientific process how to have children that were of royal quality, who actually had the mentality of being a leader, what Krishna calls Ishwara Bhav. Now, Ishwara literally means controller. Bhav means the emotion, the mood. But Srila Prabhupada explains this Ishwara Bhav means the mood of protection, the mood of care. The main business of the head of state is not warfare. The main business of the head of state is social welfare work, making sure that the citizens are materially prosperous, are spiritually prosperous, are taken care of in all respects. So they knew scientific processes how to get a particular kind of child. I mean, now, you know, there's fertility clinics where they can separate out the male and the female sperm and they can create embryos and then kill the ones that aren't so healthy or whatever. But in ancient times, they could do this without violence, with subtle sciences. So this Rishyasringa, and there's a long story about Rishyasringa, which we don't have time to tell tonight. But Rishyasringa came and performed this sacrifice whereby a special payasa came, which given to the queens of Dasarath would enable them to produce worthy children. So from Dasarath's three queens were born four sons, two twins, Ram, Bharat, Lakshman, and Shatrughna, from the queens Kausalya, Kaikeyi, and Sumitra. So these four children are described generally as Vasudev, Sankarsham, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. Although sometimes, as Prabhupada describes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's Vishnu and Sesha and the conch and the disc. So this is the Lord coming with his incarnation. So not only was Dasarath going to get a worthy heir from a normal point of view, but he actually had the Supreme Lord come to earth. Now one may ask, how is it possible for God to appear on this earth? But why not? If we accept that God has inconceivable powers, then why cannot he appear? Or sometimes people think that, well, if God appears, he must have a body like ours, because he's appearing in a human-like form, with two arms and two legs and two eyes and so forth. And we may think, well, that means he has a body of flesh and blood and has to digest his food and he perspires and so forth. But that's not a fact. Actually, when the Lord appears on earth, he appears in his original, transcendental, spiritual form, which is unchanging. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Srijamyaham, I manifest myself. So here we see Dasarath and his four divine sons, which the king took care of with great love and affection. So in this world, there's different kinds of relationships. We can't have a relationship of a servant and a master, like a relationship one has with one's employer or with one's country. One can have a relationship between friends, between parents and children, or between lovers and beloved. Or one can have just a reverential relationship, like perhaps we have with a rock star. So the origin of all these relationships is there with Krishna and his incarnations in the spiritual world. So here we find this concept that God is my child. Now Krishna says, Aham Bija Pradapita, I am the father of everyone. And generally people in the world, they worship God as the father. But here we see that the Lord's devotees, they can have a mood that God is my child. So from one point of view, that's not possible. God cannot be anyone's child. Everyone is God's child. But from the point of view of love, it is possible. And in love of God, one can have all these relationships that exist in this world in their perfect form. And here's Ram and his mother, Kausalya. So Kausalya was the mother of Ram, Kaikeyi the mother of Bharat, and Sumitra the mother of Lakshman and Shatrughna. And the four brothers were trained, although in one sense, one can say that God doesn't need to be trained. He doesn't need to be educated. In fact, he is educating everyone. Matasmatir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. He's giving everyone knowledge. But yet, he goes to school. Why? First of all, to set an example that everybody has to get an education. And second of all, because the Lord also has a relationship with the devotees acting as his teachers. And in those days, school was differentiated. Now, at the start of the Industrial Revolution, education changed in the world. Because formerly, children used to often learn their occupation from their parents or their village elders. But when industrialization started, that couldn't happen anymore. And children who'd always contributed economically to the family, as did the women, all of a sudden they were working in the factories, which was very dangerous for them, very bad for their health, and they weren't getting a proper education. So then there was the mandate gradually in all the countries of the world that all children had to go to school. And then in school, all children were taught exactly the same thing. Although actually each of us has different needs in our life and different propensities and different ways that we want to develop our own personal expertise. So formally, children were educated according to their nature. So there was a general education given, general literacy, but then people were given the education that suited who they were and what they wanted to be. You didn't have to take all sorts of courses that you never used. Like how many of you here use calculus in your daily life? Oh, I expected to find at least one or two. But we all had to study it, right? And the things we really wanted to learn, we practically couldn't start learning until our 20s, if you can even figure out by that time what you want to learn. So in the days of Lord Ramachandra, the students were taught individualized, differentiated education from the beginning. So here, because they were going to be the rulers, they also had to learn the art of weaponry and protection. It's possible to get a glass of water. Now, at one point, after finishing their education, when the boys were 16 years old, so King Dasarath was visited by the sage Vishwamrita Muni. And the conversation between Vishwamrita Muni and Dasarath is very instructive. Srila Prabhupada often refers to this conversation. wherein Viswamrita Muni comes to see King Dasarath. And Dasarath says to the Muni, "How is it going with conquering birth and death?" And the Muni says to the king, "How is it going with protecting your kingdom and the subjects?" Right, so generally, again, just like we have, you know, one size fits all or one size fits none education, so we also have, you know, a general greeting, "How are you?" But used to be that greetings were according to one's position, according to one's area of service in the world. So each of us has an area of service in this world, an area of our acting according to our nature that we're then offering to Krishna. So some of us are protecting ideas and ideals and truth and philosophy. Some of us are protecting people and morals and ethics. Some of us are protecting the natural resources and the animals. Some of us are protecting the arts and the crafts and the skills and the services. So when you ask somebody how they're doing, it's how are you doing in your area of service? How are you doing in the area in which you're connecting the body and mind that we have in this life to Krishna? So after this greeting, then Dasarath said to Viswamrita, because this was the culture, he said, "My dear great sage, I'd like to give you something." Now, this Dasarath did this twice in his life. He said, "Whatever you like, you can have."
Wow.
Yes. Wow. Now, how many of us would say that to somebody? "Whatever you like, you can have." Is there anyone we trust that much? Probably not. So Dasarath said this, and then he was immediately sorry, because Viswamrita said, "Actually, I'd like two of your sons." "Oh, what would you like them for?" "Well, you see, we're performing a great sacrifice for spiritual realization. But there are demons that come and disturb the sacrifice. There are these two sons of Tarika, Marich and Subahu, and when we go to light the sacred fire, they're throwing bones and feces and urine and blood into the fire and ruining our sacrifice." "Well, my dear Viswamrita, why don't you kill them? You have enough yogic power that you could kill them or imprison them or do whatever needs to be done." "Oh, but if I exercise my yogic power for that purpose, I won't be able to execute the sacrifice. That's not what I, as a Muni, am supposed to use my powers for. You, as the king, you're supposed to use your powers for that." "Ah, well, I'm the king. Why don't you have me go and capture or kill these demons?" "My dear king, these demons are very powerful, and you will not be able to kill them." "Well, if I can't, then how could my 16-year-old sons do so? They just graduated from school. They haven't even had their first job yet." You know, they're not established in the world. And Viswamrita said, "You don't understand the identity of your children. Don't worry." And then the king's guru, Vasistha, he said, "My dear King Dasarath, actually Viswamrita Muni has the power to vanquish these demons, and simply because he's a Muni, he's not doing so, but he will protect your sons." Because Dasarath was in the mood that his sons were his sons, rather than that sons were God. And Dasarath finally said, "All right." Because Viswamrita also said, you know, you have to keep your word. Now this is an important theme in the story of Lord Ramchandra, the theme of truthfulness. Srila Prabhupada, in the 17th chapter of the first canto of Bhagavatam, when Parikshit is dealing with the age of Kali, says the essence of how to please Krishna is truthfulness. Interesting. So Dasarath said, "All right, I will keep my word. I said you could have anything. You can have my sons, but please take care of them." And so Viswamrita took Ram and Lakshman with him to the hermitage. And on the way, the young boys served the sage, and he taught them all kinds of divine, the use of all kinds of divine weapons. On the way, they came to a deserted hermitage. And there the Muni Viswamrita asked Lord Ramachandra to put his feet on one of the stones there. As soon as he did that, the stone turned into Ahalya, a Brahmana lady. So formerly, Ahalya had a benediction that she would never appear older than 16, and she was very beautiful. And as many material benedictions do, it proved to be a mixed blessing. Just like they've shown that many times when people win the lottery, a few months later, they're worse off, you know. They're more unhappy than before. All that money actually causes them a great deal of trouble. So this Ahalya was very proud of her beauty, and even the devas were attracted to her. One time when her husband was bathing, Indra took the form of her husband and came and proposed to her. And she knew that it wasn't her husband. And she said, all right. And then her husband came back, and there he saw Indra, and he cursed Indra to become impotent, and he cursed his wife to become stone. And he said that you will be released from this curse when Ram touches you, when you're touched by the lotus feet of the Lord. And then she was reunited with her husband. So then they went a little further, and they saw the demon Tarika. And Tarika was devastating the whole area, all of the forests, and causing great trouble for the animals and the sages. Now, generally, according to Vedic codes, the king would not give a woman capital punishment. But on the order of Vishwamitra, he said, Ram, you must kill this demon in the form of a woman. So obeying the order of the Muni, Ram did so. Then he waited at the Jagya for Marich and Subahu to come, and as they came and started pouring all the filthy elements into the fire, so Ram killed Subahu, but he didn't kill Marich. Instead, he simply sent him at a far distance and demonstrated his power to him, knowing that there would be another purpose in the future. And sometimes we may wonder why Krishna doesn't immediately devastate all of the obstacles and difficulties in our life. But we have to remember that to the Lord, everything is his lila, everything is a story. And we who become devotees of Krishna, we want to enter into these stories of the Lord. And therefore, sometimes there may be apparent difficulties where the Lord can act as a hero. So that's going to happen later on in this story. So then Vishwamitra said, now that you've saved our sacrifice from these demons, I'd like you to come to me to Mithila. There is the bow of Lord Shiva. And whoever breaks this bow will have the hand of Sita as his wife. So Sita, when she was a very young girl, had picked up this bow. Although normally the bow could only be carried by, some places it says 300 strong men, sometimes 1,500 strong men. So this was the test to see who was actually qualified to marry Sita. And many different kings and princes came, and they could not lift the bow, what to speak of string it. So Ram, with his left hand, easily picked up the bow, and not only easily strung it, but as he went to string it, it broke.
The women called to their friends, come, 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 see this beautiful exchange. Look at the beautiful Sita. See the handsome Ram.
So then Ram and Sita married.
Hari Bol!
Jai Sita Ram! And Sita had a sister named Urmila. She married Ram's brother Lakshmana, and her two cousins married Ram's other brothers. So all four brothers and Sita's sister and two cousins all got married in one wonderful festival. Now, after the wedding, Parasuram, another incarnation of Krishna, he came objecting to the fact that Ram had broken the bow of Shiva. So he contested with Ram. Ram defeated him, and Parasuram then left the earth, that his time was over. And then Sita and Ram live for a long time in Ayodhya. One day, Dasarath was thinking that Ram had become old enough and experienced enough to take over the kingdom, and declared that the next day he was going to coronate Ram as the king. Now, this happened to be at a time when Kaikeyi's son Bharat was out of the kingdom along with Shatrughna. And Kaikeyi's servant, Mantara, went to Kaikeyi and said, "The reason that your husband is going to crown Ram and crown him so fast is because he wants to put Bharat in a subservient position. He wants to deny Bharat his rights, and you yourself will become a servant of Queen Kausalya. Your line will finish." So Kaikeyi became deceived by her maidservant. She took off all of her fancy clothes and jewelry and lay on the floor, as if overwhelmed with grief. When her husband Dasarath went to find her, she said, "A long time ago, you made me a promise when I saved your life on the battlefield. And you told me at that time," what did he say? "You can have whatever you want." "Not only you can have whatever you want, you can have two whatever you wants." "You can have two things, whatever you want." What does he think his wife's going to ask for? A new necklace, you know, something like that. And she said, "I'm satisfied. I have everything I want. I don't need anything. But I'll remember this, and later if I want anything, I'll ask you." And he forgot about it, and she actually forgot about it. And Mantara reminded her, "You know, the king owes you two promises." She said, "What should I ask for?" And Mantara had said, "You should ask for Bharat to be made the king instead of Ram." She said, "All right." And then Mantara said, "But you should ask for something else also. You should ask that Ram be exiled for 14 years. And this way Bharat's claim on the throne will be secure." Now, we should understand what exile meant. So nowadays, you really couldn't exile anybody, could you? I mean, I guess you could prevent them from entering a country, you know, the immigration officers could say, "Okay, you can't come into the UK anymore." But if we said, you know, "You're exiled from this temple," you just go to another temple. Or "You're exiled from London," you know, just go to Paris. I mean, it's not really a problem. But in those days, exile was a very severe punishment, and it was considered equal to capital punishment. So exile as a punishment was generally given to people who, for whatever reason, deserved capital punishment, but you weren't going to kill them. So like the royalty, you know, a prince, you might not want to execute him if he did a capital crime, so instead you exile him. So it was a very severe punishment. And somehow or other, Kaikeyi was convinced of this. So she asked Dasarath, "Please make Bharat the king and exile Ram to the forest for 14 years. And Dasarath was horror-struck. And he said, "I thought you were my wife. I thought you saw your stepsons as good as your own son. You know, why have you become influenced?" So this is a very, of course, this is the pastimes of the Lord. It's transcendental lila. But it's a very important instruction for us that even if we're in the personal association of the Lord, that if we allow ourselves to be bewildered by what Prabhupada would call bad association. One of my friends said to me, "You know, if you want to do something, you want to make a change in your life, just change who you hang out with." So it's very, very possible for good people to become ruined and for bad people to become elevated just by who they associate with and who they listen to. Kaikeyi was a very elevated soul. She was the mother of Bharat, an incarnation of God himself also. And still she became bewildered. She thought, "Okay, you know, I'll do whatever you say." So Dasarath didn't want to comply, but Lord Ramachandra said to his father, "My dear father, I have to uphold your promise. If I don't agree to these conditions, then you'll be a liar, because you promised your wife two boons." So he went into exile as an ascetic, putting on bark garments. Later, Ram and Lakshman also matted their hair. And even though everyone was condemning Kaikeyi, still she persisted. Sometimes we do that, isn't it? Everyone tells us, "Don't do this, don't do that," and we stubbornly stick to a path that will lead to destruction. So Ram gets the blessings of Kausalya to go to the forest. Now the exile was only for Ram, but his wife Sita said, I will come with you. And Ram said, well, you don't have to come with me. You could go, you could stay here, or you could go back and live at your father's house. And she said, no, marriage is for good or for bad. Like the modern Western vow is, you know, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness or in health. Of course, nowadays, many people don't take that seriously anymore. You know, I'm only be married to you if it's for better and in health and richer. But that's not love. That's not love. Love isn't just when it's pleasing or convenient for me. Love means you actually can't have love without commitment. It's not possible. And Sita said, oh, I'm going to stay with you when you're a royal prince in the palace, and when you're in exile in the forest, then I go live with my father in luxury? No. However you live, I will live. And he couldn't argue with her. She defeated him. She won the debate. He said, all right, you can come. And then Ram's brother Lakshman said, I will also come. So the three of them took leave of Kausalya to go to the forest. And everyone wanted to follow Ram and Lakshman and Sita. They said, what use is Ayodhya without you? You are our Ayodhya. Wherever you go, there will be our Ayodhya. Let Bharat have an empty kingdom. Let Bharat and his mother Kaikeyi have nothing. We will go with you. We'll set up a new Ayodhya in the forest. But Ram tricked the citizens, and while they were sleeping at night, he took the chariot through the river Tamasa and went the other way, because he wanted to actually fulfill the demands of Kaikeyi and make his father truthful. And he had other purposes in mind as well. So then going through the forest, he met Guha, who was a tribal chief. Now, we notice in the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra that many of his devotees out of Ayodhya are animals and materially low-class people. So therefore we say patita pavana. So to be a devotee of the Lord, to attain self-realization, does not require material qualifications. Now, materially speaking, if you want to do this or that in this world, you may have to become so qualified, take so many courses, have so many this and that. But to fall in love with God, to attain our original state of eternal knowledge and bliss, the only qualifications you need are desire and love, and that's all. And nothing else, nothing else, nothing else. That's all. Prabhupada writes in the first canto, one can get out of the material entanglement simply by desiring to do so. Our whole process of bhakti yoga, according to Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, text 9, is simply to bring out and nourish this desire. Our Acharya Rupa Goswami says the same thing, that the only price to pay is in the intense desire, practically like greediness, not material greed like for money, greediness for love. Wanting it, wanting only love of God and not wanting anything else. So if one wants only love of God, it doesn't matter who one is. So Ram had this wonderful devotee, a Guha, who arranged for Ram, Lakshman, and Sita to cross the Ganges. And here the boatman asked for his price. His price was he wanted to wash the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra. So here also we see a very simple person, probably not a well-educated person, just someone rowing a boat across the river, but he is a great enlightened devotee of the Lord. So then Ram, Lakshman, and Sita, they met many sages in the forest. And the sages told them that there were evil beings, cannibals, who would attack the sages who were not having any means of protecting themselves because the sages didn't engage in violence. And they said, please, Ram, now that you're in the forest, would you protect us? And Ram took a vow. He said, while I'm in the forest, I will protect the sages. And Sita said, is that actually proper when you're in exile? Is that your duty? And Ram says, even though I'm in exile, I am still the proper ruler of the land, and it's my duty to give protection. Meanwhile, Dasarath was overwhelmed with grief. The Supreme Lord, who was his son, who he had wanted to install on the throne the next day, was instead given a punishment equal to death. And the way he felt about it is this: it happened because of his own promise. He felt responsible. Now, all of us want a loving relationship where that love always increases. We want friends, beloveds, children, associates, where our feeling of affection and closeness to them always gets better, isn't it?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in our material relationships, often the opposite happens. Often our feeling of affection and love decrease. But with Krishna or any of his incarnations, the love between the devotees and the Lord is always increasing. And Krishna does things to increase that love more and more. And sometimes the way that he has of increasing that love is to have an apparent separation between himself and the devotee. That when the devotee is separated from him, the intensity of their desire for his presence, the intensity of their feelings of love and affection goes beyond any kind of limit. So Dasarath's feelings of love and affection for Lord Ramachandra increased and increased and increased and increased and increased. And in that mood of great spiritual love, of ecstatic bliss of spiritual love, he left this world. Now apparently also Dasarath left this world because of a curse. That when he was a young man, he had the art of being able to hit a target just by hearing the sound. He didn't have to see the target. And one time he was out hunting to perfect, because the soldiers and the kings, they had to be able to act in warfare. They had to practice the military art. So he was out hunting, and he thought he heard the sound of a baby elephant drinking. So just aiming for the sound, he shot his arrow. He ended up killing a young Brahmin boy who was getting water for his old blind parents. And when the parents found that the king had accidentally killed their son in grief, they said, "You will also die at the grief of separation from your son." So he remembered this curse as he was leaving his body. So meanwhile, Bharat came back to the kingdom, and he found that his father had died. He found out of the intrigue of his mother, and he renounced his mother. He said, "Kaikei, you're not my mother anymore. I want nothing to do with this. I don't want to be king instead of Ram. I don't want Ram exiled. In fact, I'm going to go out to the forest and I'm going to bring Ram back and install him on the throne as should have been done in the first place." So Bharat comes to the forest, guided by Guha, who you see here, and he begs Ram to return. And Ram says, "I'm very sorry, I can't do that." He said, "Our father said that you should be king and I should be exiled. And we cannot make our father a liar." And Bharat said, "You know, forget about this. I don't care about keep making our father truthful. I care about serving you." So this is the devotees have so much love for the Lord. They're willing to do anything for him. And his love for Ram was so great that Ram couldn't deny him. He said, "All right, instead of you being the king, you rule for 14 years, but as my representative, instead of as the king." So Bharat said, "All right, please give me your shoes. I will put your shoes on the throne as the symbol of your being the king, and I will rule as your servant." And actually, Bharat, when he returned to Ayodhya, he performed more austerities than Ram was doing in the forest. He said, "For my sake, Ram was banished, and I'm Ram's servant. I should sleep lower than him." And he lived on barley cooked in the urine of a cow. That was how he maintained himself, according to Bhagavatam, for 14 years. Well, they pretty soon had an opportunity to protect the sages. The brothers were attacked by Virad. And he attacked Sita, and the brothers killed him. Oh, then Ravana had a sister named Shurpanavka. And she was a very ugly lady, but she fell in love with Ramachandra. Now, that wasn't very hard to do. Ramachandra was an easy person to fall in love with. In fact, we're all supposed to fall in love with Ramachandra, too. But she didn't exactly fall in love with Ramachandra in a very good way. Shurpanavka really epitomizes what goes in the material world for love. She said, "My dear Ram, I want to marry you." And he said, "Well, there's a problem here. I took a vow that I would only have one wife." Because in those days, people practiced polygamy, especially the kings, just like Dasarath had three wives. But Ram said, "I will only have one wife." Now, that's not like our modern monogamy, okay? Our modern monogamy is really serial polygamy. Our modern monogamy is just one wife at a time, or one husband at a time, right? So it's fine in modern society to have five wives as long as you don't have them all together. Right? Or if you're not married to them, you can have them all together. That's fine. No problem. Five girlfriends, 20 girlfriends, or five boyfriends, or 20 boyfriends. You can have them all at the same time as long as you're not married to them. So, you know, sometimes we look at these old customs and say, oh, polygamy, that's exploitation of women, and blah, 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 blah. And we're really doing the same thing, except in that society, if you had more than one wife, or sometimes more than one husband, like Draupadi had more than one husband, you actually took care of them. Not like today, you can have 20 girlfriends, you don't take care of any of them. Right? Or if you have one wife or one husband after another, once you've gotten rid of the husband or wife, you don't take care of them anymore. Too bad. You're my ex-wife, you know, you're my ex-husband, you're on your own. So in former times, it was recognized that some people wanted a relationship with more than one partner. It's not that that doesn't exist today. It's not that everybody only has one partner. But they knew how to do it in a way that was dharmic. So Ram took this vow as an austerity. I'm only going to have one wife. And this again meant one wife, whole life. If your wife dies, you don't marry again. It really meant just one wife. So it was a very, very intense vow. And he said, "I'm really sorry, Shurpanavka. I can't marry you too. You can't be my second wife. I'm only having one wife." And he said, "If you like, you can marry Lakshman." He hasn't taken that vow. His wife isn't here. She stayed back in Ayodhya. And Lakshman said, "Well, I'm just my brother's servant, and you look like a princess. So I don't think you'd be very happy marrying a servant. Why don't you go and ask Ram again?" And Ram said, "I'm really sorry." And she said, "Oh, the problem is Sita." So she went to kill Sita. At which point Lakshman cut off her nose and ears as a punishment. So she had two brothers, or three, Kardushan and Trishiras, that were staying nearby. In Jambasan, there was an outpost there of the demons who were going from that outpost and eating the sages. So she went to her brothers and she made up a story. She said that Ram and Lakshman had attacked her without cause and that they should defend her honor. So Kardushan and Trishiras came to attack Ram and Lakshman. So at that point, Ram asked Lakshman to protect Sita, and he fought single-handedly against Kar, Dushan, and 14,000 demon cannibals. Alone. So at that time, one survivor, Akampan, along with Ravana's sister, Shurpanavka, went to Ravana and told him that Ram had defeated Kar and Dushan and Trishiras and 14,000 of his army, and asked that he take revenge. Ravana decided that the way he would take revenge was not in open combat with Ram. He decided that what he would do was lure Ram away by having Marich, you remember Marich? From back in the sacrifice? Having Marich, who was a wizard, having him take the form of a golden deer, which would entice Ram and Lakshman away from the hermitage to capture the deer, and then he could carry away Sita. And he felt in this way, he would damage Ram far more than open combat. Of course, he also did this because he was afraid that if he challenged Ram in open combat, that he would lose. So now the golden deer comes before Sita. And indeed, Sita asks Ram to get the deer. So Ram left and put Lakshman in charge of Sita. Some say that Lakshman, in waiting for Sita and hearing Ram's voice, as Sita did, protected Sita then with a magic circle. Because as Ram noticed that the deer was actually a demon in disguise, he killed it. And the demon said, because he was a wizard, imitating the voice of Ram, "Oh Sita, oh Lakshman, come help me." And Sita went a little off. She said, "Go help your brother." And Lakshman said, "He can't be hurt by any demon." And Sita said, "You must help him." She said, "I know why you're not going. You want your brother to die so you can marry me." And Lakshman was so hurt that he left. And he left Sita alone. Then Ravana, pretending to be a sage, came to the hermitage and asking for some food from Sita, kidnapped her and put her on his chariot to take her to his kingdom of Lanka. Oh, but there was a sentry guarding the hermitage. And who was that? Jatayu. Now, this Jatayu was a vulture. So not only was he not human, not only was he an animal, but he was, we would consider, a very low creature. A vulture is not, if you want to insult somebody, you call them a vulture. But even he was a great devotee of Lord Ramachandra. And he said, "Ravana, you cannot take Sita in my presence." So he fought with Ravana. Although Sita said, "My dear Jatayu, don't. You're much older. And Ravana is much stronger than you." But still he said, "If I don't at least try to rescue you from Ravana, what is the use of my life?" So Jatayu is an example of failure in devotional service. Because as we see here, Ravana cut off his wings and talons and killed him and kidnapped Sita anyway. It's not that if you're a devotee of the Lord that everything you do in the Lord's service will be externally successful. Of course, Jatayu had an ultimate success. And that was that, he was able to tell Ram and Lakshman Sita was taken by Ravana and went southwards. But his main success was that the sacrifice of his life pleased the Lord, who then had a funeral ceremony like he would have for his own father. So our success in our spiritual life is the pleasure of the Lord, not whether or not things externally are successful, not whether or not things externally work out in terms of material success. So hearing that Ravana had kidnapped Sita and taken her southward, Ram and Lakshman started searching the forest everywhere for Sita. Now Ram and Sita, they're like the sun and the sunshine. How can they ever be separated? The grief of Ram, although it's transcendental grief, and therefore it's a form of ecstatic bliss, but his grief and separation from Sita were immeasurable. As they went through the forest looking for Sita, they were captured by a huge creature that was just a torso and two long arms. Taking their swords, they cut off the arms of Kabanda, and burning him, he assumed a celestial form and told them that they should go find the tribal Sabari. So Sabari was a tribal lady who had become the disciple of Matanga Muni. And Matanga Muni had told her before he departed this world that the Supreme Lord in his form of Ram and Lakshman will come here to your hermitage. So you stay in the world. But he didn't tell her when. So in a similar way, Srila Prabhupada's telling us, if we chant the Hare Krishna mantra every day, if we offer our food to Krishna, we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we worship the deity, that certainly Krishna will manifest in our heart. Certainly we will see Krishna face to face and speak to him, just like we speak to anybody else. So Sabari had faith in the words of her guru. So every day she thought, maybe Ram is coming today. Maybe Ram is coming today. So every day she would decorate the pathway to her hermitage with flowers. So in the same way, every day when we are chanting, every day when we're studying the scriptures, we should think, Krishna might come today. Krishna might come today. And we should decorate the pathway of our heart with flowers. Clean it like Mahaprabhu cleaned the Gundicha temple, and decorate everything with flowers to receive him. So many, many years after her guru gave her this instruction, as she was decorating the pathway with flowers, there she saw the lotus feet of Ramchandra and Lakshmana. So she invited them to her hut, and she offered them some forest berries. But remember, she was a tribal, and so she wasn't very schooled. And therefore, she decided that the best way to tell whether or not the berries were fit to offer the Lord was to taste them first. So she would take a bite out of each berry to see if it was sweet enough to give to Lord Ramachandra. So she was giving him berries with bite marks in them. And still the Lord accepted them because they were offered with love. Although we have many rules and regulations in practicing bhakti yoga, the ultimate purpose of the rules and regulations is to bring us beyond rules and regulations to a platform of spontaneous love. So Shabari told Ramachandra that he should go to Lake Pampa and there find the monkey king Sugriva and his minister Hanuman, who would certainly help him to find Ravana and defeat them. So following her instructions, Ram and Lakshman went down to Lake Pampa, where there Hanuman greeted them initially in disguise and brought them to his king Sugriva, who himself was exiled by his brother Bali. So Ram and Sugriva made a pact of friendship. And Sugriva said, I will help you to kill Ravana if you will help me to kill Bali, who has usurped the kingdom and kidnapped my wife. So after that, Lord Ramachandra killed Bali, and he established Sugriva on the throne. Now, after establishing Sugriva on the throne, Sugriva, who'd been in exile for a very, 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 very long time, and it was the rainy season, which meant they couldn't do anything then anyway. All the paths were impassable. He thought, okay, during the rainy season, let me finally relax and enjoy my kingdom again. You know, if you've done austerities for a long, long time, when the austerities are over, you want to relax and enjoy. And that's what Sugriva did. And after all, he was a monkey. And then Ram and Lakshman noticed that the rainy season was ending and Sugriva hadn't done anything yet. So Ram sent Lakshman to find Sugriva, and Lakshman was pretty angry. But Sugriva's wife, Tara, pacified Lakshman and got Lakshman to forgive Sugriva. So even if one is a great devotee of the Lord, even if one sees the Lord personally, even if one has a direct pact of friendship with the Lord, the living entity is prone to forgetfulness. But the Lord says, Apichet Sucharacharo, even if someone has some difficulty, if he worships the Lord, he very quickly comes back to the position of a sadhu. Therefore, one may not associate with someone who's in a fallen condition, but one should not criticize a fallen sadhu. So then, Sugriva dispatched monkeys in all directions to find Sita, north, south, east, west. But they particularly dispatched Hanuman to the south, which is where Jatayu had said Ravana had gone, and hoping that Hanuman would find Sita, Ram gave Hanuman a token of his ring.
Ramana
of you can recognize my taste in music. And so here's Ram embracing Hanuman. May you be successful in your mission. So Hanuman and the monkeys got to the shore of the ocean through many adventures, which we don't have time to tell. And how were they going to cross the ocean? So many of the monkeys said, well, I could get halfway across, or I could get all the way there, but I couldn't get all the way back. And Srila Prabhupada talks about the monkeys bragging as just like people who say, yes, yes, I can renounce the world, but when it comes down to it, they can't do it. So Hanuman, he had actually forgotten that he had the power to cross the ocean, and he was, that's also a long story, and he was reminded, actually, you have the ability to do this in the service of Ram. So Hanuman, with one jump, crossed over the ocean from India to Lanka. And on the way, he also had a number of incredible adventures. The Ramayana is a very long story. We'd have to have several hours to tell, although maybe several days to tell all the details. So when he arrives there, he looks for Sita everywhere. He finally finds her in the Ashok forest. And hiding in a tree, he hears Ravana come and threaten Sita. Sita, if you don't surrender to me and become my wife, then I will have my cooks cut you up and I will eat you for breakfast. So this is materialistic love. Love me or I'll hurt you. Demoniac love. By the way, Krishna's not like that. Krishna doesn't, although there are many religious people who think that God is like that. You know, love me or you burn an eternal lake of fire. That's not the way, that's not really the mood of Krishna at all. Eko bhagunam yo vidadati kaman. Krishna gives everybody what they want. And Krishna doesn't have this kind of mood. He is simply waiting and begging for our love. So then Hanuman, he sings to Sita the pastimes of Ram and shows her the ring of Ram and gradually wins her trust. And then she says, my dear Hanuman, Ravana is going to kill me in only 2 months' time. He says, Sita, I can carry you back to Ram. And she says, no, my Lord should come and rescue me personally. So this is interesting because Hanuman's mission was just to find where Sita was. So he decided to go a little bit beyond his mission. Now, this is risky. And he definitely took a risk. But anyway, he did. He ate the fruits in the Ashok Grove, and he damaged the Ashok Grove, like we saw in the play. And therefore, he was arrested and brought before Ravana. And Ravana was going to kill him. But then his brother, Bibhishana, who was actually a devotee of Lord Ramachandra, said, no, you don't kill a messenger, but you can mutilate him. So Ram said, all right, monkeys love their tails. Let us set fire to the tail of Hanuman. Then Hanuman was taken with his tail on fire through all the streets of Lanka, which allowed Hanuman to find out the layout of the city, which would be very useful later on in the war. And Hanuman, who couldn't be bound by the ropes of the demons, he escaped and he used his fiery tail to set the city on fire. Sita, having heard that Hanuman's tail was alight, prayed that the fire would not burn him but be very cooling. Then Hanuman returned to Ram to tell him of the whereabouts of Sita, the strength of Lanka, and how he had set the whole kingdom on fire. Then Ram came with his army to the ocean. But how were they going to cross the ocean? They couldn't all jump over like Hanuman. So Ramchandra fasted for 3 days, and when the ocean still did not appear, he threatened to burn the ocean, at which time the god of the waters came and said, if you throw rocks on me, I will allow them to float. So then we had Ram and the monkeys built a bridge out of stones and trees, which stayed floating on the surface of the water. It'd be a long bridge over the ocean. What a feat of engineering. And then they all crossed over the bridge to Lanka. So at this point, you would expect that Ravana would have figured out that he wasn't fighting an or he wasn't going to fight an ordinary person. What ordinary person can build a bridge over the ocean? Now, also, what happened at this point is that Ravana's brother, devotee brother, Vibhishan, kept saying to Ravana, "You should return Sita to Ram. You should return Sita to Ram and make peace. This is not an ordinary enemy." And Ravana finally said, "Get out of here." So Vibhishan left Lanka, left his home, left his family, effectively had the mood of taking sannyas. He crossed the ocean by his mystic powers, and he surrendered himself to Ramchandra. The other members of Ram's army said, "How can you accept this man who's a demon? And how can you accept somebody who's been disloyal to his own brother?" And Lord Ramachandra said, "Doesn't matter. If anyone surrenders to me, even once, from that time, that person comes under my personal care." He said, "I never refuse to give shelter to anyone who surrenders." So then the battle began in Lanka. And there's a wonderful purport in the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada talks about how Ravana and his army had all sorts of sophisticated divine weapons. And what did Ram and Lakshman have? Did they go back to Ayodhya to get the army when Sita was kidnapped? No, they only had an army of monkeys. Monkeys, maybe some bears. And what weapons did the monkeys have? Some tree trunks, maybe a few clubs.
Claws and teeth.
Claws and teeth. Yeah, monkeys don't even have much claws and teeth. They're not like tigers, you know. And it's really nice purport. Prabhupada said, Ram and Lakshman, they shot a few arrows. And Prabhupada compares this situation to the modern day, right? The modern materialistic society, they have so much money. They have, sophisticated media, a whole education system. They're in control of the government. And what do we have? You know, it may seem like they have sophisticated weapons and we just have a few stones and sticks. But when you're fighting with Lord Ramachandra, you can still become victorious. So Indrajit, the son of Ravana, he attacked Ram and Lakshman with a snake weapon. And Garuda came and saved them. Again, when we're in the pastimes of the Lord, it's not that everything immediately works out just wonderfully. It's not that Ram just shows up in Lanka and poof, Ravana is dead and Sita is rescued. There's a story. There's an adventure. And those people who aren't absorbed in the pastimes of Ram and Ravana, they're going to the movies, they're buying the books of the same sort of thing, an imitation of this. Right? I mean, I remember when I used to watch the Superman TV shows when I was a kid. So, the bad guy gets Superman and ties him up. And you don't know, what's Superman going to do? How is he going to get out of it? There's some anxiety. Right? There's some excitement. And you know Superman's going to win in the end, but you don't know how. So in the same way in Krishna's pastimes, you know that Krishna's going to win. You know Lord Ramachandra's going to win. But you don't know how. It's exciting. It's an adventure. And my dear friends, we're meant to enter into these pastimes even in this life. This Hare Krishna movement is the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When you enter into these pastimes by taking part in this movement, your life will also become an adventure. It's not just that, okay, I've surrendered myself to Krishna. Krishna's going to wave some kind of magic wand and everything in my life will be all sweet and pretty. There may be crises and catastrophes. Ram himself, Lakshman himself, is apparently devastated by the snake weapon. But then Garuda comes and saves them. Huh. Well, so many of Ravana's soldiers were being killed that he decided he was going to wake up his brother, Kumbhakarna. Kumbhakarna was a giant, and he went on the battlefield stepping on the monkeys and eating them. But Ram defeated him with his arrows. Then Indrajit gave a weapon to Lakshman, which knocked him unconscious. And the physician in Ram's army said the only cure was the Sanjeevani herb in the Himalayas. So Hanuman jumped to the Himalayan range, and he saw the mountain, but as Prabhupada explains, he was a monkey. And he didn't know what the Sanjeevani herb looks like. He's looking at all the different plants. Is it this one? Is it this one? Is it this one? Which one is it? But although he was just a monkey and he couldn't figure out what was the right herb, he was very strong. So all of us are like that too. We have some things we're very good at and some things we're not very good at. So we should serve Krishna in our area of strength. So Hanuman said, I'll just bring the whole mountain. So he brought the whole mountain, and Lakshman was saved. Of course, Ram and Lakshman cannot be harmed. This is just transcendental sportive pastimes. And here are the herbs being brought to cure Lakshman. Then, after Lakshman killed Indrajit, finally Ram and Ravana are in battle themselves. And it was a very fierce battle when finally Ram shot the Brahmastra arrow into the heart of Ravana. Jai Shri Ram! So now it was time to go get Sita. And Hanuman went to Sita and said, it's time to come before your Lord. So on his request, she bathed and put on fresh garments. But when she came to Lord Ramachandra, he said, I'm very sorry. I can't just take you back. You've been here with Ravana. How do I know you haven't fallen in love with him? And so she said to Lakshman, build me a fire. And she entered into the fire and came out unscathed. Now, of course, there's a history behind this that, of course, Lord Ramachandra and Sita had known that Ravana was going to kidnap Sita. And so before the kidnapping, actually, Sita had entered into the abode of Agni. This is described in the Kurma Purana. And Agni had kept her there, and there was a shadow Sita. And there's another whole story about the shadow Sita and who she was. And she was the one who was captured by Ravana. So the main message here is if we try to enjoy the opulences of this world independently, we become like Ravana. Because Sita, Lakshmi, Radharani, they are opulence. Right? Shri, opulence. If one tries to enjoy opulence without the master of opulence, without Ram, without Krishna, without Narayana, one doesn't get actually opulence. One gets a shadow of opulence. And the shadow of opulence doesn't satisfy. Who's going to be satisfied with a shadow? So as soon as you try to take the pleasure potency from God, you end up with suffering. And as soon as you try to enjoy the pleasure potency by giving that pleasure potency to God, then you also actually enjoy. Just like Hanuman, he brings Sita to Ram, so he also enjoys. Ravana, he tries to take Sita from Ram, he simply gets a shadow. So then, Ram, Lakshman, Sita, Hanuman, Vibhishan, Sugrivan, Jambuvan, they all come back to Ayodhya on the flower airplane of Ravana. And the Bhagavatam says, as the Lord sat on his airplane of flowers, with women offering him prayers and reciters chanting about his characteristics, he appeared like the moon with the stars and planets. Sitaram ki!
Jai!
Sitaram ki!
Jai!
Sitaram ki!
Jai!
Oh. How nice if the story could have ended on the last slide. In our modern world, if politicians actually do something unethical, they try to deny it by all means and keep their position. Whereas with Lord Ramchandra, when there was even an accusation, a false accusation of something unethical, he was willing to sacrifice anything to keep the trust of the people. Because without trust, you cannot follow a leader. So when even one person in his kingdom said, oh, this Ram, he's taking an unchaste woman as his wife, Ram said, Sita, you have to go away. Of course, on a transcendental perspective, remember we were talking about the separation between Ram and Dasarath increasing their love? This so-called separation of Sita and Ram greatly increased their love and devotion to each other. Sita then, in the forest, in the ashram of Valmiki, she gave birth to twin sons, Love and Kush, who ended up coming back to the capital and reciting the Ramayana. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, now I have a little treat for all of you. It will take me 1 minute to do this. Here, this little treat is a blending of East and West. How many of you know the opera The Messiah by Handel? Any of you familiar with the opera The Messiah by Handel? Anybody? Okay, so I'm not sure if you'll be able to understand the words. It's King of Kings, Lord of Lords, and he shall reign forever and ever. Which I personally think is very appropriate for Lord Ramachandra, so you just have to give me a minute to do this.
Oh,
I hope you all enjoyed that. I always felt that was written for Lord Ramchandra. So, we have a few minutes. We can have some questions and discussions, or should we have kirtan? What's the... Where's the boss?
You can take a few questions.
Yes?
It just occurred to me as we were listening to Handel's Messiah, the words say, the lyrics say, he shall reign forever.
He shall reign forever.
And for a materialistic person, that listening to the story of Lord Ram, it sounds a contradiction. Can you explain? Because you just said that you always felt it was written for Lord Ram.
Always said what?
Because Ram
is reigning forever and ever and ever. Maybe not on this earth, but in the spiritual Ayodhya. So Lord Ramachandra is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords forever and ever and ever. It's eternal. It's not that he's just king for a few years and then he's not king anymore, whether he's manifest on this earth or not. Anybody else? Yes.
Somebody asked me the other day when was Lord Ramachandra's appearance, like how many years ago?
Oh goodness, millions.